Right, we're going to call this committee hearing to order. This is the Monday, March 18th, 2013 meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee. Members, we have four bills on the agenda, and the first three we're thinking won't take too long. It depends on the committee, of course, but we're optimistic about that, and then we'll reserve the rest of the time for Senate File 271, Senator Champion's bill. And I'll make some announcements about that bill at that time, about how we're going to order the testimony and keep decorum and that sort of thing. So with that, I saw Senator Latz. Senator Latz, are you ready? Senate File 1305. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 1305 will provide for the disposition of the remnant steel of the I-35W bridge that collapsed. There have been some survivors and families of the deceased from that bridge collapse that have requested for their own purposes to have some pieces of the bridge itself. They want to use it just for memories. Some of them, I understand, wish to dispose of it in their own way as a way of finding some closure, and so on. And this is steel pieces that would no longer be needed for any investigatory purposes or anything like that. At this point, it's almost all scrap. So it will be under the ordinary course of the process. MnDOT would have to go ahead and dispose of it according to law, basically scrapping it. They don't have the statutory authority to give it to any particular people that are requesting it, including, by the way, the State Historical Society. So the bill that you have before you would provide that statutory authority for them to do that. I know of no opposition to this bill, it actually specifies the distribution list in the bill that will be given free of charge pieces of the remnant steel. And there is a blank on page 1.20 for the number of months, and the House put 6 months in there, and we'd like to ask you to do the same so that the would have to be taken care of within 6 months from the effective date. So I have with me a representative from MnDOT if you wish to hear from him or to have any questions answered. The last piece of it is that it provides a state immunity from liability associated with the condition of the pieces of the steel. They have, among other things, it may have lead-based paint on them. So once the state disposes of them, we wash our hands, so to speak.
Members of quorum is present. Senator Kent, would you like to move the amendment to the number 6 in the blank space on line 1.20?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to amend that on line 1.20 it become a period of 6 months.
All right. Any questions on the Kent amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Mr. Peterson, did you have anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, no, Senator Latz described the bill and our intent very well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions, members?
Yeah.
Senator Sendham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Latz probably covered this. On line 1.10, where it talks about pieces of remnant steel and so on, I'm just going to assume, but I don't see it discussed here. If I ask for 10 tons, could I have 10 tons?
Senator Latz.
I'm going to defer to Mr. Peterson.
The question is, are there reasonable limits to, you know, where somebody uses one of these as a memento versus a source of income?
You know, it's a fair question. I don't know the answer. I'll ask Mr. Peterson to address it.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sendham, on line 1.18, the commissioner has the authority to determine the size of the pieces to be distributed, and we have not heard a request from any person or organization for, you know, unreasonable size pieces or quantities, and so we're comfortable, I think, with
that.
Thank
you. Mr. Chair, good enough.
Thank you, Senator Sendham. Anything further, members? Senator Miller.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Sendham, as long as you come to Winona with that 10-ton of steel, we'll be in good shape.
Oh, family. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 1305? No? Senator Kent? Senator Lest, does this liability provision in the back propel the bill to judiciary?
Yes.
Mr. Gordon is saying yes. I will assure it a hearing.
Very good. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1305 be recommended for passage and referred to judiciary.
As amended.
As amended.
All right. Any questions on the motion? Anything further on the bill, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Latz.
Thank you.
So, members, we have Senator Rood, Senate File 1133. A few days ago, we had Senator Bonoff's bill. This is the opposite. Senator Rood.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Members, we have Senate File 1133. I would like to move the A1 amendment in order to put it into the author's.
The A1 amendment, do we have that?
Yes.
Oh, coming around. We wait until the amendment is distributed, Senator Rood. Have the A1 amendment.
I would move the amendment.
Senator Sengen moves the A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also would like to offer an oral amendment that was taken in the other body that was a friendly amendment to this, and I'm not sure maybe council can help us, but in the bill it references a one-day event, and many of them are 2 days. So we would like that to just reflect to be a 2-day event instead.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, there is a reference to one day on 2.23, but I'd just like to take one more minute and see if there are any other references that need to be changed.
All right. Senator Sengen, would you like to
Mr. Chair, I would move that on line 2.23 that we strike one and insert two so that we have a 2-day special event.
All right. Any questions on the amendment, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. To the bill, Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, you notice in your agenda that I have a lot of testifiers here today, but you'll also notice that we have 7 inches of snow north of Brainerd today, so you've just got me. In January, Brainerd held its 22nd annual Brainerd JC Fishing Contest, the Extravaganza. It's the world's largest one-day fishing event. The event draws over 10,000 participants across Minnesota and, for that matter, around the world. And in 2013, we had 11,500 participants on the ice. Each year, the event raises between $100,000 and $200,000 for organizations such as Camp Confidence, which is a nonprofit organization serving children and adults and developmental disabilities. Last year, we had over 12,000 day campers. 100% of the proceeds go back to our community. It's all volunteer. We have over 300 JCs plus 50 community organizations such as PTA and the Scouts and Lions and the Sertomas, Rotaries. You get the idea. The contest brings an estimated of $1 to $2 million of revenue each year to our local businesses. We even get national media on ESPN. And, of course, the most famous year was when we had Governor Dayton visit our event. To safely and efficiently transport participants, the event utilizes approximately 70 school buses to shuttle folks between the Brainerd International Raceway and Gull Lake, where the event is being held. It's simply not feasible or safe for thousands of vehicles to go park on the lake or to park on the sides of the roads. So we park them 2 to 5 miles away, and we shuttle them in school buses. It was brought to the attention of the event organizers last year following the event that current state law requires separate licensing and inspecting for school buses and motor carriers. And our event wants to comply with the law, but this would become very expensive to for that short period of time to relicense all of our buses. So it would, you know, the expense would significantly curtail what we could give to our community as we raise the money for this from this event. So this bill would allow for use of the school bus or buses where they can't be easily used under current law, and it carves out a very specific circumstance where school buses can be used to transport non-pupils without the complex regulations and costs. The State Patrol did have some concerns, and hence we worked with them and worked out an agreement with them, and that's why we have the A1 amendment. And I think I'll let our State Patrol speak to that.
Thanks. Brian Rue with the Minnesota State Patrol Commercial Vehicle Section, Office of Pupil Transportation. Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Representative Rue indicated, we did have some concerns with the initial language. The most significant one was the last section of the original language conflicted with the federal regulations, which if we would conflict with that, the State Patrol or Minnesota would lose $3.8 million in federal grant money. So we did have the opportunity to work with Representative Ward and his constituents and Senator Root's constituents on this, and to alleviate that concern of ours, and the amendment takes care of that, and we no longer have any more concerns with the language in this bill.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any questions?
Members, any questions? Senator Rude, did you have any other testifiers today?
No, they're pretty much snowed in.
All right, is there anybody else who wishes to testify about this bill? All right, seeing none.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Kiffmeyer.
I was just going to comment. This is such a sensible bill that we take what we already have in use that is a trusted vehicle in the community, and instead of all the duplication and the cost that would have to occur, that working with the State Patrol, you came up with a good way to be able to make this useful to your community and yet working with the State Patrol to come up with the language that they need. So I appreciate this bill very much. My dad was a school bus driver, and I rode many school buses. My favorite seat was right behind him. And appreciate all of the school transportation things that go on. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would just move Senate File 1133 as amended to general orders for consideration.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. All in favor, please
aye.
Say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Rude. Next, we have Senate File 1173 and Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
whenever you're ready.
Madam Chair, members, Senate File 1173 has to do with regional rail authorities, which, of course, are contiguous with our counties. And Madam Chair and members, what this does is it provides a definition to the term project for the purpose of developing light rail or commuter rail as a function of the bill we passed in 2008. Regional rail authority cost participation was capped at 10%. This is for capital dollars for federal New Starts projects like Central Corridor, Southwest Light Rail, et cetera. And the purpose of this is to make sure that we're defining what elements of those new starts at the outset of a particular rail development project regional rail authorities can participate in by actually excluding some of the elements so that then regional rail authorities aren't brought in much later after the fact and ask for their dollars. It's something we don't permit. So really it's just kind of a technical clarification in our bill. Those elements would be infill stations, project enhancements, extensions, supportive infrastructure, et cetera, after the initial phases of project development are completed. And that's my bill. We have Mr. Schreiber here who is able to expand further and help explain what we're trying to accomplish if need be.
Thank you. Mr. Schreiber.
Madam Chair and committee members, I think Senator Dibble did a good job of explaining the reason for the legislation.
And Mr. Schreiber, could you please identify yourself?
I'm sorry. I'm Bill Schreiber with the Mesley and Kramer Law Firm, and we represent the county's Transit Improvement Board. If you recall, during the discussion of Central Corridor, there were three stations desired by the city of St. Paul, desired by neighborhoods, desired by the business community, that originally were not going to be included in the project. Ultimately, they were included, and so they were able to generate the 50% federal funding for those station sites. But it raised the question, what if those three stations were excluded in order to meet the federal New Starts criteria? Clearly, at some point in the future, there would have been an add-on at least of one or two or perhaps all three station sites. And then we had the 10% cap that would be applicable to the regional rail authority's participation, but no federal funding in all likelihood. So this is to clarify what you'd already done in 2008. The expectation was that the participation on the part of the regional rail authorities was in conjunction with the federal New Starts project. But we don't define federal new starts in the state formula because that can change every couple of years, and it's probably not wise to create a formula that is changing at the federal level. So we created here a definition of what we believe the federal new starts participation is, and that's a minimal operating segment.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I don't know if Schreiber mentioned it, or if I failed to mention it, regional rail authority dollars are, of course, are property tax dollars levied at the county, essentially the county level.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dibble or Mr. Schreiber, you referenced that this was kind of an unintended consequence, but the way I'm reading this, maybe this is another way to describe it, but it appears to me that it's kind of taking some of those costs or getting those regional rail authorities kind of off the hook for the capital expenditures. Is that a way to describe it? Could you help if that's not accurate?
Madam Chair, if I get this wrong, you can correct me, but the short answer is it more has to do with a point in time than it does an eligible expense. The cost participation comes at the front end, and that's not uncommon with how these rail projects kind of get their start, get some of the initial dollars, some of the initial alternatives analysis, feasibility studies, some of the initial capital outlays. Sometimes it's some right-of-way acquisition, and, and some of those sorts of capital expenses. Once it crosses a certain threshold, then and that 10% cap has been met, then these costs become ineligible for those local property tax dollars. Is that correct?
Yes, and I think Senator Peterson, probably most importantly, it's hard to envision at the time that you start a project what may result later on when the development occurs around these stations. And I think there's an expectation that there will be a certain degree of participation, as there had been in the past, where the county's regional rail authority could negotiate with the city, negotiate with others, and so on, in terms of a cost participation formula. And the fact that you have this solid 10% in statute seems to work against reasonable negotiation among the local elected officials.
Thank you, Mr. Schreiber. Members, questions? Senator Peterson?
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I'm trying to get a sense for who might oppose this. So based on those comments there, would a city oppose this type of change in the event that they would be asked to pay more for it down the road in terms of operation of the line? Or
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, I don't think the cities would be involved in any way, shape, or form, and I can't imagine that they would be opposed. I don't know who would be opposed. I don't think anyone would be opposed to this.
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, I think when these issues among the local communities and counties and cities and others negotiating together, it sometimes boils down to, if you can't give a little bit, there may not be a project at all. So if the city is very desirous in having this, providing some flexibility to the county may be important.
So Madam Chair, maybe another way to ask it is, if we're changing the percentage for the rail authority, the percentage for everybody else goes up then. Is that right? No?
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, we're simply the percentage is already set. So we're not really changing anything. We're just kind of clarifying. It's really, like I said before, it's really a point in time clarification. So after the light rail transit is, after the rail transit is operational, this really speaks to some of the negotiation that goes on at the outset when projects are first being conceived in the initial development phases. This is something we accomplished in 2008, and this is kind of picking up the tail end, kind of an unfinished piece of language that just provides a little better clarification of what we accomplished in 2008. It's property tax relief.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I will move Senate File 1173 be recommended to pass and sent to the general orders calendar.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. And next we have Senator Champion with Senate File 271.
Members, it is 3:30. We did pretty well on those first three bills. Maybe we can do just as well on this bill. So, members, we are going to finish this bill by the conclusion of committee today. What I'd like to do is take about a half hour or so for testimony. We don't have, a hard time certain. So we'll see how that transpires, but we'll hope to move through testimony fairly efficiently in, half hour or so, and then have some discussion with the chief author and some discussion among ourselves and get to a vote before conclusion. To the audience, try to keep demonstrations and public expressions to a minimum. We don't, the House is different. Senate, we're very quiet. I'm just just kidding. I used to be a House member, so I can say that. And with that, so we have Senator Champion, Senate File 271. Senator Champion, proceed as you will.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. Today, we're going to talk about and hopefully pass Senate File 271. Now, 271 is simple in context, but I think it's a very important bill, and I thought it would be important for us to put it in the right framework. Why is this important? One, this particular Senate file is about public safety, and it affects all of us. It creates safer roads. It increases the number of insured drivers, and you'll hear more about this as time progresses. It decreases the number of car accidents. It protects the civil rights of our residents. It also creates family stability and healthier communities, and we believe that to be very important. So as we look through this lens, it's so important for us to look at the greater impact that any piece of public policy will have. It also promotes integration and collaboration between the immigrant community and local government. I also think it's important for us to think about the individuals that will be impacted, even though we all will be impacted in a positive way. But when we think in terms of the economy, in 2010, the Latino buying power in Minnesota totaled $5.1 billion. And the Latino-owned businesses had sales and receipts of $1.6 billion and employed a little under 6,000 people in Minnesota. If all unauthorized immigrants were removed from Minnesota, we believe that the state would lose $4.4 billion in economic activity, $2 billion in gross state product, and approximately just a little under 25,000 jobs. We all win. Businesses will be better equipped to recruit and retain workers. Workers will have the ability to have access and mobility to jobs, and we can help create financial stability in our communities of color. Even though I focused a little on the Latino community, but that's with all of our immigrant community. Minnesota's future. As baby boomers retire, immigrants will increasingly be critical for continued economic growth and ensuring a steady flow of new workers. The U.S. needs new taxpayers to help fund Social Security, Medicare, and new workers to fill retiring positions and provide health care services. But anytime that we can expand our tax base is always an important notion. If you look at page 2 of the handout that I provided for you as well, we believe that there's one big fact. Almost 80% of all people in Minnesota drive alone to work. And this information was garnered from the U.S. Census Bureau. Now, here's what this bill is about. It's simply this. Senate File 271 provides us tools to sustain and grow Minnesota's prosperity by allowing individuals to get a driver's license. Right now, when we think in terms of the proof that is required for a person to get a driver's license, it's articulated there, but what this Senate file would do is that it would add as a primary document to the list of identification requirements, which is that a person could use a birth certificate, for an example, from another country that can be verified and authenticated, even a passport. And all these things, if you look at our rules, there's a litany of things that would have to be done in order to make sure that any person, which is the same process that we go through right now in the great state of Minnesota. If someone wants to get a driver's license, there's a primary source that is looked at, and then there's a secondary source. And the secondary source is really looked at if the primary source is something that people cannot produce or doesn't meet the criteria. But that is as simple as this goes. Is that this particular bill would allow, again, the primary document to meet all of the other requirements, such as full legal name, middle name, last name, month, date, and year of birth. And even in our rules, it provides that any documentation that's going to be used from another place of space has to be verified. It has to be translated. So there's already some protections there as well. There's no change to the attesting requirements, so everything else will be the same still. Even the road test. So a person has to demonstrate that they have the capabilities and the capacity by which to be on Minnesota's roads.
As I mentioned earlier, if we go to the next slide about the proof of identity, just so that I didn't confuse any of you great ones, to apply for a Minnesota driver's license, identification card, or instruction permit, you must present, one, a Minnesota driver's license, instruction permit, or state identification card that is current or expire for 5 years or less if it has a photo, 1 year or less if it does not have a photo. If you do not have one of these items that I just mentioned, you must present one primary source, which is what I said earlier, and one secondary form of identification. And as I mentioned, the primary document must contain all those other clarifications. So here the modification, again, would allow a government identification notion to be used like a passport, a birth certificate issued by a country other than the United States to be used as a primary document to apply for a driver's license. And again, as I mentioned, because we want to make sure that people don't think that there is any changes to or decreasing down the amount of verifiable information that has to be provided. So again, it's the full name, date of birth of the cardholder, a photograph identifying the cardholder, a unique identification number, and what it also provides for is a security feature that makes the card as impervious to alterations as is reasonably practical in its design and quality of material and technology, using materials that are not readily available to the general public. Next slide. Testing will go on as the way it has done. Skills test. That's as simple as this bill is. It provides an opportunity or pathway for individuals to be able to get a driver's license here in the state of Minnesota. Where's the practical implication of that? If a person goes to get a driver's license, they have to pay in order to do that. So there's no burden on the state. In fact, it would increase our revenues. Number two, it helps to assure that people who are driving should be driving on our state roads, but also making sure that they can get insurance. That is an important notion. What it also does, it allows us to see different people, who they are, so that they are no longer in the shadows of life, but for us to provide a pathway for recognition. And even though we know that the federal government is going to have to deal with the issue of immigration reform, in this great state, we want to make sure that we are doing all that's necessary in order to make people feel welcome and a part of our society. Someone asked me earlier, and I want to make sure that I articulate this. Someone said, well, what other states are doing this? Well, currently, I asked for a little note. Washington State has been doing this for the last 10 years, New Mexico, Utah, and in fact, Illinois was the most recent state to adopt such a process. And in fact, their law went into enactment January of this year. And so with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee has, but I do have a couple testifiers who could potentially come forward and provide some additional light on this issue.
Senator Champion, did you want to deal with your amendments now?
Yes. I have two amendments.
All right.
And if I could deal with those right now, that'd be great. The A1 amendment, I would like for someone I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Yeah.
You know how it is sometimes that you make these presentations and you're not a member of the committee, so you wait for someone on the committee to do it. But I'm happy to be a part of this great committee.
All right.
The A1 amendment is a result of my discussions with the Department of Public Safety or Driver and Motor Vehicle Services. There's the repealer that we have in here, and we wanted the repealer to be much more focused on the issue at hand and for us not to inadvertently repeal some law or some information that they need or authorization that they need for enhancement driver's license. We're not trying to do anything with any other aspect of the law, so this is a result of our discussions with them. And if you look at lines 1.4 to 1.5, what that really is about is right now the Department of Public Safety provides a temporary card, and on that temporary card is a status date, which usually correlates with a visa or something of that particular nature. Should this legislation go forward and be successful, all this legislation allows to happen, or this amendment allows to happen, is for the Department of Public Safety not to have to give out those cards all over again, but the person could actually keep it until its natural termination. And therefore, there would be no fiscal impact. So I wanted to make sure that that was a part of the process here. So I ask that the committee adopt the A1 amendment.
Any questions, members, on the A1? It's an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries.
And for the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair, I'm asking the committee to adopt the A2 amendment. The A2 amendment is really language that is a part of an agreement between the committee members on the A, excuse me, in the House, and this will put the bill in the form that we believe that it should be in. And if you look at 1.8 and 1.9, we want to make sure that any document not in English must be accompanied by a qualified English translation, and that's also consistent with the law right now, but we want to make sure that it was really clear that would be something that needed to be a part of the process. So with that, I would ask that the committee adopt the A2 amendment.
Okay, members, questions on the A2? I'll let it continue to be distributed. I'll give folks a second to glance it over. Questions on the A2? Not. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Senator Champion, testimony.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to invite looking for Councilmember Robert Lilligren.
Is Councilmember Glidden joining us today?
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 271. Senator Champion, thanks for your leadership on this. I'm Robert Lilligren. I am the Vice President of the Minneapolis City Council, and I will be speaking on behalf of the city's position here. I'll also be speaking as a representative of my 32,000 constituents in a core city ward that has been a gateway community for over a century. And as of the last census, some 40% of my constituents are either foreign-born or the children of foreign-born parents. So although I'm on a municipal elected official, I deal with new arrival issues on almost a daily basis, and that includes refugees, asylees, and a range of immigrants with a range of documentation status. I'm here to speak in support of this bill on behalf of the City of Minneapolis. Our official position on this, which was crafted before the bill had been introduced, was that the City of Minneapolis supports legislation that modifies the Minnesota driver's license procedures to allow information regarding the applicant to be gathered from an identification card issued by a government other than the United States. And so our support on 271 is consistent with that. I'll speak briefly in support of this. I also have a short statement signed by the Minneapolis Chief of Police Janae Harto in support of the bill as well, and I'll read that. This is very important to the people I represent, to the City of Minneapolis and to the state of Minnesota. This impacts a growing community that in a lot of ways represents growth for our state and for my city and our state and city's future. I have participated in a number of meetings with residents of the City of Minneapolis where families, both small groups, one-on-one, and in quite large community meetings, where families have expressed their lack of access to work, lack of access to education, because they are prohibited from accessing a Minnesota driver's license. And also there's been an underlying sense of fear in communities where even the most casual interaction with law enforcement can result in when an individual is unable to produce a Minnesota driver's license. These casual interactions with law enforcement can send an individual on a deportation track that would tear families apart. And let me tell you, some of these stories have been tremendously painful to listen to. The City of Minneapolis position has been crafted with the participation of the community through our Neighborhood Community Relations Department convening of a Latino engagement task force that was comprised of leaders within the immigrant community that represented collectively thousands and thousands of individuals and constituents through their member organizations. This is important to public safety as well. We will have more trained and insured drivers on the road in our state, and believe me, I've listened to plenty of stories from constituents of mine who have been involved in minor accidents with uninsured drivers, and that can be a very difficult and messy thing to face. But as important, it's been a great way of engaging this growing sector of our population in our city and state and bringing people out of the shadows and into compliance. And passing this, we all win. I would like to read a letter signed by Police Chief Janae Hartle. She's the chief of police in the city of Minneapolis, and senators, I actually brought copies of this, if you like. It's dated today, and it says, "Honorable senators, the city of Minneapolis and I, as chief police chief, are supportive of Senate File 271 to expand eligibility for Minnesota driver's license to allow information regarding the application to be gathered from an identification card issued by a government other than the United States. This is a public safety issue for our city and state that affects us all. The passage of this bill will create a safer environment and healthier communities. By expanding the eligibility, it will add to the number of insured drivers on the road while protecting the civil rights of all our residents. By allowing individuals to use identification cards issued by other governments, we are allowing individuals to become properly trained behind the wheel and thus directly decrease the number of accidents on the road. We all win when local governments collaborate with the immigrant communities. We all win when roads are safer and more drivers are insured. We all win when we pass Senate File 271. Sincerely, Janae L. Hartle, Chief of Police in the City of Minneapolis." That concludes my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Thank you, Vice President Lilligren. Questions, members? Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I did ask for there to be two representatives from the community to come testify as opposed to everybody coming to the mic to testify. And so they have decided to oblige my request. And so I'm going to ask those two representatives to come up and speak now. One can be here, and one can be here. And just make sure you introduce yourself for the record, and then we'll make sure that you sign in as well so we can get...
All right, welcome to the committee. Okay. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Patricia De Leon, and I have lived in Minnesota since 1995. I had to make the difficult choice of moving to the U.S. in order to provide for my two daughters. I made Minnesota my home because I have family here. I'm an honest, hardworking taxpayer, but I have to live here without a driver's license for the past 18 years. One of my daughters graduated from high school in Minnesota. She was involved in a number of extracurricular academics and community activities. I had to overcome my fear of driving without a license because I have always wanted to see my daughter succeed. I'm proud that she's so involved, and I've always done everything in my power to see her become a productive member of this community. My work also requires that I spend many hours on the road because I'm a nanny. I have to drive the children I care for to school, to their social activities. I also take them to the hospital when their parents are unable to. As you already know, a driver's license is also a form of state ID. I cannot own a car, open a bank account, or buy a home using my name. In these 18 years, I have driven my daughter, the children I care for, my sister, as she needed. My sister is now a college graduate. And when she was a student, I used to drive her to the university so she wouldn't have to pay the costly university parking fees. I also wanted to support my sister in her educational aspirations so I would care for her children when she had to study for her finals. All of this has required me to drive, always in fear. Undocumented youth are taking brave steps and sharing their dreams of pursuing college degrees. At 52, I still dream of obtaining a college degree. In 2004, I obtained my GED and started looking into college programs. This has been a scary and often discouraging journey because I'm required to show an ID. I know that a college degree will allow me to contribute even more to the economy of our state. I applied for legal permanent residency 13 years ago. My mother and my daughter are both legal permanent residents, and my two sisters are U.S. citizens. All of us live in constant state of fear as I speak to you today. I'm in fear. But I know it is crucial that I share my story to contextualize the need to pass this bill. Please, today I'm asking you to support Bill SF 271. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. De Leon. Any questions, members? All right, Senator Chan.
Hi, next
please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Angel Godinez, and I would like to testify. First of all, I would like to speak on behalf of everybody here, on behalf of the families that have been tormented with this fear in the back of our minds of being taken away from our families, being separated. And with that fear comes an even bigger one of deportation. Because of the siblings that are not of age, 18 years or older, we could be in foster care if we don't have any other relatives here living with us. And I would like to say that that has impacted me personally, because in a very bad way, I should say, because I would hate to see my siblings to grow up, to get their dreams destroyed, their goals in life, because I would like to see them grow up to be something better than us. And they do have the opportunity, that chance, because they do have a good legal status here. And It's just a life living in the shadows is not a life at all, because it's as if we would be living invincible to everybody else. We would be living as if we don't exist. But by supporting us in this driver license bill, it would definitely impact us in a good way, because we would be able to take our children to the hospital without having to fear that somebody could take us away at that moment when our kids are in need of some type of sickness that they have, some type of requirement that they have to turn into school, and just leave them there. That will conclude my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Godinez. Any questions, members? All right. Thank you both very much. Appreciate your presence.
Mr. Chair, if I could have Pat McCormick come up and just talk about whether the department has the capabilities of doing this. I know they're not taking a position on the bill, but I just want the committee to be able to have some information around the practicality of it.
All right. Thank you. All right. Ms. McCormick. Oh, there she is. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And I've also asked that Joan Kupchinski, our Driver Services Program Director, come up in addition in case there's a detailed question that she may need to answer.
Thank you.
Senator Champion wanted me to talk about the administration of the the bill the way it's written, and the amendment, and we had suggested some of those changes just because of the fact that currently we have, I think it's 31,000 driver's licenses and ID cards that have a status check on those licenses and ID cards. And people that have that are here with temporary legal status. And so at the current time, the way our program works, when that status check identifies the date that their current immigration document ends. And so we provide a notice 60 days prior to when we when that status check ends, and people that have a status check card can come in and renew it at no cost to that individual. The only time that it costs them to get another card is when their renewal date ends, which is at every 4 years. And so we asked for that particular amendment so that those individuals would be able to continue with their card until the renewal if they wanted to. For one thing, just for the costs involved, but also just because that process is already in place and people are used to that process, and we wouldn't want to displace people that were already in that are here legally with a status check date on their card. So that was a request for that amendment. Obviously, there are the primary and secondary documents that we use right now are for people that are here with legal presence. And so those documents include immigration documents and other documents that they would be able to have that show that they are who they say they are. And this, the other documents that are talked about in the amendment, that would be something we would administer in addition to what we do with the primary and secondary documents. So it basically, the way we've discussed it based on what we're reading in the bill, it would be kind of a two-track process where we'd have people that are here using immigration documents and then people that are attesting to who they are. And my understanding is they have to have a certified translation of those documents. We do have ID document books that our staff utilize to identify documents from all states, but there is also a book that shows all approved ID from other countries as well. And so that would be, if this bill became law, that would be something we would have to have our staff have available, driver's license agents and our exam staff, so that we would have a way to identify that. The other thing is that we do currently have a certificate of translation that would be used in this process according to what the amendment says. And that requires that someone who is either certified as a translator or an attorney would look at it and attest to the fact that it is valid. So that would be how we're viewing the process from what we've read in the bill. And if there's any questions, we'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Questions, members? Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Ms. McCormick, question on, I see the fiscal note. And it only indicates in fiscal year 14 that there's an impact. Would there not need to be additional ongoing verification of some of these documents that, you know, if you're presented with a document, don't you need to go back to the jurisdiction to verify that it's legitimate? Wouldn't that actually create ongoing costs?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmak, our staff are trained on a regular basis to identify documents. There's the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators has a fraudulent document recognition training that we regularly train our staff with. And so they would be able to identify the documents. And every year, the document I was talking about, the books that show the various state IDs and the foreign country documents. We don't use that one much, but we get updates every year on those for that. The costs that were in that fiscal note were taken care of by this amendment that was passed. That was only for people that have a status check date where we would have to give them a free license for everyone that might come in under that program. That takes care of the cost in the fiscal note. Because we wouldn't be hiring any additional staff. It would just be normal training that we do with our staff, at least at this point. Until we get a request for a fiscal note, I can't officially tell you, but from what we're seeing, I don't think we're seeing any additional costs other than the training we normally do on a regular basis and keep up to date. We are members of the AMVA organization, and so that training is provided to us because of our membership with that organization.
Mr. Chair, one final question. Now, the driver's license itself, that would be the same as anyone on this panel that would receive it. Would it be exactly identical with all the same pieces of information? Is that what we're doing here?
Mr. Chair and Senator, at this time, that's what we would be doing. It would be the same. That would be the same card.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I have for you relates specifically to the fiscal note, as well as long as you're up here. So, would there be any anticipation that this would have an impact on your information technology system and your software in your department, or
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson. Annually, we usually do, at least annually, we redesign our driver's license application. So it would have to be, we would make the changes when we do our annual redesign of the driver license application. Usually we have some type of requirement that changes every year or so that we have to do, and we make enough for 1 year. I think, was that what?
It's about a 6 month.
Okay, printing. A 6 month printing. So we would be able to do that probably as part of this. As I said, until we get the bill, we are not allowed by management and budget to give out an actual fiscal impact until we get a request to look at the bill. So once we have it in front of us as amended, we will do the official fiscal note. But I would say that we would, because of the time frame and the date of effective date, I think it would be within when we would normally redesign our application.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the reason I asked a question in the Finance Committee, we've had significant discussion about this, and I think, I don't know if Ms. Boyd would have any further information, but I think it's been made clear to me by the fiscal staff management that if there's any bill that has an IT impact or an information technology impact has to go to the state's Office of Information Technology. I forget what that's called. In fact, Senator Bonhoff was very involved in that last session. And so it appears to me that this bill would need to go to that information technology department as well. Is that accurate? Or?
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, I don't think I can answer that question directly about the requirement. I can check on it for you and get back to you. There will be an updated fiscal note requested on this after committee in any case, but I will check on that piece for you.
Okay. Senator Peterson, we're referring this bill to finance.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, then the question is for Senator Champion. Are you opposed to, because I have a copy of the memo I can forward to you as well. It does require any bill that has an information technology impact. It does need to go to that office for review. So, Senator Champion, are you opposed to this bill going to the information technology to be reviewed for the costs?
Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not opposed, but I prefer to go the route of if this bill is going to pass, to go to finance, and then we could talk to information technology, and should they decide that they need to see it because of the shape of the bill, then I would not have any other challenges.
So, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Boyd, that would be a standard part of the fiscal note. development process, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chair, yes, that would be up to MMB when they get the fiscal note request to review which agencies would need to see the bill to complete that.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Chair, members, the only reason I bring it up is because we have seen, in fact, the healthcare exchange bill, which has significant impact on IT and information technology, did not go through that process. And so, I mean, clearly there is a law in the books that requests that, and that would be my concern. And I think that that issue will be raised in finance again. And so, Senator Champion, I would encourage you to go through that process, because I think it's going to come up there again. If you know, under the agency names, you have Public Safety Department, if it doesn't have, I forget what the acronym for that, Minnesota.
Minute.
Okay, yeah. If it does not have a minute under that agency name, I would say you'll have that question raised there. And I do have, you know, reservations. I would like to know the costs, the real costs of it, before I would vote on it as well. But no matter what happens here, you will have to deal with that in finance as well. And I would encourage you to make sure it goes to minute.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, I think we established several times in the Finance Committee that what you're talking about is an administrative policy and not a legislative policy. And the legislature goes through their own process of developing fiscal notes, and that's irrelevant to the, I mean, it may be somebody anticipating a cost in the administration, but for our fiscal policies, our fiscal notes, it's not relevant to our fiscal notes.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, that's up to the administration. If they want to send something through that doesn't have the accurate costs reflected, I think that's something MMB would have to deal with at a later date, certainly.
Yeah. Okay. Questions, Member Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, I'm just looking through the bill and the changes. Let me ask a hypothetical situation. I work with a number of people who have immigrated from India, China. They have people who come and visit them for extended period of time. Under the residency requirements and the changes that have been made to the bill, is it possible that someone in this extended visit could obtain a Minnesota driver's license, even though they're, and attest to their residency without actually being a resident?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, yes, they could if they were here and the immigration document stated that they, what the purpose of, if it's an official approved immigration document, they could get a driver's license or ID card. But they have to follow all the other rules in terms of testing and all those things. But it would have a status check date on it. So that says how long they can stay on the card. It's right on the front of the card in red. It says status check, and it gives a date.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, but doesn't the repealer and the changes to the law no longer require an immigration document and no longer require a status check?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, there's two different tracks here. There would be a track where you can have temporary immigration documents that you would be allowed to get an ID. That's in a different chapter of the rules than the rules that are being repealed. There are documents that you are allowed to have to show you who you are and what you're here for. As you probably know, we have a lot of temporary workers that come in with visas into Minnesota, and we have one of the largest immigrant-serving group of agencies also, so that we do have a lot of immigrants that are coming into the state, and they would have immigration documents.
Senator Pratt.
I'm sorry, Ms. McCormick. I'm not sure that answers my question. I'm talking about this process specifically, not about another process. Under this process, is it possible for the scenario that I described to happen?
Ms. McCormick.
Well, what you're saying is if they come in without an immigration document,
mm-hmm.
if they have an approved translation to prove who they say they are in a document, then they and they attest to the fact that they live in Minnesota, then they would be able to get a driver's license if they passed all the tests or get an ID card. But they would have to have an approved certified document, a passport or something to that effect, and we would have to verify that that was a true document of that country.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McCormick, could you define for me what it means to attest and give me some examples in statute where you use that word for any other purpose?
Ms. And to defer to Ms. Kopchinski to be able to give you an example.
Welcome, Ms. Kopchinski. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Joan Kopchinski. I'm the Driver Services Director. To your question, Senator Kiffmeyer, we use attestation for an address on an application. I don't know the particular site, but it is that is one form of attestation. You are agreeing to the or you are attesting to the fact that that is your residence on the application, driver's license application.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, how does that compare, then, to the rules that are being deleted here, which include proof of residency required at time of application?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, the rules are still in place for primary and secondary documents. That's a different chapter of the rules. That this would be the ones that are being repealed have specifically to do with the status check part of the application. They don't have to do with the rules for primary and secondary documents. This just allows another way to do it when it talks about a valid unexpired passport issued in a country other than the United States, and then it does talk about attesting to the fact that you live in the state of Minnesota, and you do provide an address from what my memory of when I looked at the bill. Okay.
Thank you. So, Ms. McCormick, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So there's going to be a real special set of rules here in this situation that nobody else gets to use. Is that correct?
Senator Champion, Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, we do allow some translation of documents in the primary and secondary documents currently. This is very specific to including a valid unexpired passport. And with a birth certificate from another country. Those do differ, but it is still something that does have to be, that we would have to verify that it was a qualified English translation. So that would be one thing that we would have to add probably to the rules, I would assume, to so that we would have a description of it, and it'd be an objective description that we would be able to allow us to administer that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Champion.
And to the Senator. Right now, under Minnesota rules, 7410.0400, subpart 3, it already provides for this level of verification. And in fact, I'll read, quote, under subpart 3, a certified copy of a record of birth issued by a government jurisdiction other than one in the United States, the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, or the United States. It just talks about the verification of all that information still would have to be done. And that's even before implementation of this rule.
Mr. Chairman.
This brief change.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But those are territories of the United States. So very, very different than what we're talking about here. And then it begs the question, then, why are you making the statutory change in 2.8, which seems to supersede those rules?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Champion.
Senator Kiffmeyer, we're not implementing anything to supersede. We're expanding it to say that if a person presents documentation from another country, that would be a part of that would go through the verification process as well and could be used as a secondary document, be it for a passport or a birth certificate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this does not get simpler by any means. It seems like this is a very unique situation. We're creating kind of a two-status situation here. The other question is, this is basically, you're talking about this being worldwide, then they could just come from anywhere. And how are you going to know that this is a government identification card that's acceptable? How do you do that? And how can this cost be so minor and insignificant when clearly this has a tremendous level of effort here to go with doing this?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Champion,
I'll attempt to answer that, and then I'll defer to Ms. McCormick. My understanding from the testimony that I've heard from Ms. McCormick is that currently the department already has this process in place. They have training that they do every year around this particular issue. In fact, they are a member of a specific organization that provides that training and process. There's materials that they evaluate even today that they march through those steps because of the number of individuals that they have who applies for a driver's license here in the state of Minnesota. So it's my understanding that this would not exponentially change the way that they deal with the process. And that's the testimony that I heard earlier. And I'll defer to Ms. McCormick to correct me if I'm wrong.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, it certainly is it'll be adding to what we're doing, but it is training that we give. But we would have to get the books that deal with other countries' identification requirements. So we would have to have those for all of our agent offices and all of our exam offices. So it would expand on what we're doing, and it would be an additional part of our training.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a significant, absolutely significant. We have many countries worldwide, and this is not limiting this to a few. It is greatly expanding the work that I see here in a tremendous way, and in addition, adding to it a special process for those in this situation. So I just have grave concerns about the cost, the impact of this bill, and matter of fact, even right now we have a issue going on with duplicate driver's licenses in the DVS and other issues. So I am concerned that now we're going to introduce another special process for some people that has a tremendous a lot of issues here, Senator. A lot of concerns.
So I have Senator Osmick, then Peterson, then Franz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to reiterate and go back to Senator Pratt's point, and then I have one follow-up question. So the document, that the license that's going to be provided in these cases is not going to be distinguishable from my license or Senator Franzen's license or any other person here. There is going to be no distinguishing characteristic between the licenses that are being proposed and our licenses of existing people. Is that correct?
Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding of what the earlier testimony was is that there would be no difference between those licenses.
Okay, thank you. And this question then goes to Ms. Berzofsky. I believe I know what the answer to this, and former Secretary of State Kiffmeyer could probably answer this one too. One of the regulations we have for voting is something called motor voter. And you are allowed to use your driver's license as identification to go in and register to vote and vote in any election in Minnesota. Is that correct?
you know.
Mr. Chair, I would want to double check on that, but I believe that that's true. But I would like to double check.
And so I'll ask the question to Senator Kiffmeyer. I believe the answer is yes. You can go, if you have never registered to vote, you can go into any place with a license that proves your address, go in and vote, as long as you're in the right precinct and you're in the right area, that you can vote in any election with a driver's license without being pre-registered whatsoever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
You certainly can attempt to do so, but it's not legal. It is not legal. If you are not a U.S. citizen, you are not eligible to vote, nor is it legal for you to attempt to register to vote. And on the voter registration form, it clearly says, the first question at the top, are you a United States citizen? However, here's the issue. You have many polling places around our state. You have many election judges. And currently, they are trained to look for the status check, which helps them to know that this person is not eligible to vote by virtue of the fact that they have an immigration status and denotes that they're not a citizen. From what I'm hearing in this testimony, there would be no such mark on this kind of a driver's license or state ID card. So though it may not be legal, it raises grave concerns about these things happening, especially where our current system would be relying almost exclusively on that tool for many cases.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmek, on our driver's license application, you are allowed to register to vote. And your first question is, are you a U.S. citizen? And then it talks about the fact that there's a fine and a penalty if you aren't telling the truth on that application. We send nightly files to the Secretary of State's office. We also implement the HAVA requirements, which require checking the last four digits of Social Security numbers. And so there are other ways that we do verify with the Secretary of State's office whether or not that person is a citizen when they fill out their driver's license application.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very concerned with this. There's more problems that I have, and Mr. Chair and I had actually I asked the question: What in this bill was bringing so many people into the room that were going to ticket it? Now I realize what the issue is. It's the repealer.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr.
This point.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just do a follow-up on that, because I think it would be important to do that. Ms. McCormick brings up a very important point. You have a system, then, that you can go and check on. The situation here, though, is you have another country. There is no system to do that. You also have a situation where if somebody is undocumented, which means there is no status check, there is none of those things to go against, there would be a void. And so it would come back as a null, meaning a negative, which generally would make it okay. However, in this case, obviously not okay. This system was not set up for this. It does not provide a check or a balance to exactly the thing you brought up, Senator Osmek.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick, does this bill create any concern for you in terms of the integrity of our driver's license system? I could envision folks that are interested in any illegal activity, whether it be identity theft, anybody that could use a second driver's license to open another bank account or that type of thing, coming to Minnesota, attesting to an address, getting a second driver's license, and not even live in this state. Are you concerned about the integrity of our system with other folks coming to Minnesota to get our driver's licenses for criminal activity? Or
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, I think that certainly those are issues that we try to take seriously with every application, fraud, and we're implementing facial recognition with our
new system and on a continual basis. I think that will certainly help, and certainly it's something we try to be aware of and ensure. That's why we would ensure that we had, if this happens, we would have to make sure that our staff have good training and fraudulent document recognition as well. I think it's something that we have to always try to improve on. It's not something that we can take lightly in any case.
Yeah, Ms. McCormick, I guess I wasn't necessarily referring to folks that were coming from other countries. I could see a criminal in the U.S. who's certainly a U.S. citizen who lives in another state, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, wherever, come to Minnesota, come to a driver's license office, attest to living down the street, and attest to living in our neighborhoods, and get a driver's license when they actually don't live here.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, I'm looking to Ms. Kupchinski, but there is a national driver register as well where we check by name the whole register with every driver's license application that we get. And so if there is any violations in another state, they have to be taken care of, and we have to verify that the person has taken care of them before we will issue them a driver's license in Minnesota. I don't
Senator
know if
Pearson.
You want to add anything.
Okay. So with this bill taking away the proof of residency in Minnesota, I'm not sure how your staff is going to identify whether they live here or not.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, we prove identity by the fact that we don't give over-the-counter driver's licenses. We mail them to that address. If they're not at that address, the post office returns them, and I don't know how many we get on a monthly basis. Ms. Kupchinski would know, but the post office works very closely with us to make sure that they can't go to a mailbox unless we have a post office box, and those are in very rare situations throughout the state. So it has to go to the person's actual address, or else it's returned to our office, and we keep them unless somebody has to come in and claim it, and we have to look at the person and verify their identity.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, because I'm not sure if Ms. McCormick answered this question, but there's nothing in this bill that takes away proof of residency. There's nothing that undermines that. There's nothing that alters that. Nothing in this bill does that. Same level of scrutiny that it takes for our current system is the same level of scrutiny that is required going forward. So I just wanted to make sure that that was clear, because I think I heard someone say that this bill was taking away the residency verification notion.
Senator Dibble, would Ms. Berezovsky be willing to respond to that? I see the summary provided for us in regards to this bill clearly says that it's removed in Section 2. Proof of residency is removed.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, there are subparts, well, actually the entire the section of rules that is being repealed is called proof of residency. As I read the different subparts, they basically relate to short-term residency in this particular section. So at the time of application, at the time of renewal, an applicant has to attest to a residence address and demonstrate proof of lawful short-term admission, permanent United States resident status, indefinite authorized present status, or citizenship. So that's as far as these subparts seem to go in terms of proof of residency. But yes, those are being repealed in this bill.
So is that doing something you thought it wasn't, Senator Champion?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Champion.
The notion that I'm speaking to is it removes the whole notion around permanency because there was the status checks question and that whole temporary card issue. So as it pertains to whether a person on the application has to attest to their residency in the state of Minnesota, that is still a part of this bill. They still have to do that.
All right. Senator Franz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to some of the concerns that some of the members, I believe Senator Kiffmeyer mentioned that this, and I'm paraphrasing, it's a new group of people, but I have issue with that because we already have residents in our state that are from all over the world, so there is a process, and I think the testifiers have already mentioned that they belong to certain groups that actually have, I assume, best practices in place to deal with the documents that come from different countries. So let's not forget that this is already law and people are coming from all over the world moving to this great state and eventually getting their driver's license if they meet the requirements. So we're not adding, I don't believe, to the process. There is a process, and I believe I'm comfortable with that. On the question of the repealer, the Senator Osmick mentioned, I don't believe that that particular requirement that we have our if I am going to get married and my fiancé is coming from a different country, that I would have to – their license needs to be tagged with, you know, I'm not a citizen for whatever purpose or for whatever period of time. That's newer law. That was a requirement the legislature did, and maybe Ms. Berezkowski can mention – give us a little brief history on that. So to say that our system isn't set up to do what this bill proposes is also questionable because – the law that we're trying to repeal is not that old, and it doesn't really serve the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish here anyway, so I don't think that those really match up. I believe that the whole having your status on your ID is purely Minnesota way to do immigration reform, which has nothing to do really with the core of the issue here, which is to provide licenses and being able to have people who qualify for it able to drive safely and able to carry insurance and the other benefits that having a license provides. But I certainly respect the concerns people have on voting, but those are separate issues. We're not opening, you know, we're not passing this bill to allow for illegal voting. This is, you're trying to blur the lines, and although I understand why you're doing it, I think our system is well more than able to accomplish what we're trying to do today. So I just like to say, ask if we can get a little brief history of the area, the part of the law that we're trying to repeal. If I missed that, if someone can just quickly elaborate for me, perhaps.
History. History lesson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Franzen, there were the, I think it was, and I'm trying to look at what the year was, 2004, was it? We have this. Okay, so if you want to look at the history, maybe we should make, this is basically in 1998, DVS identification requirements included an original or certified copy of a birth certificate that was used as proof of name and identity if a driver's license or ID card wasn't available. DVS also accepted an alien identification card issued by the U.S. or a foreign passport if it met the full name requirement. These documents were in the rules that have now been expanded upon. In 1998, DVS amended its rules and specified required identification. At that time, only one document was needed. In September of 2000, we updated our rules, eliminating what was then called an I-94 document as an identity document because it's merely stated a time and it didn't act to identify an applicant. It was just a piece of paper. In September of 2003, we adopted rules to provide the status check box on the driver's license card to document temporary legal presence and require a full face image. And the applicant must supply immigration documents, and an expiration date on those documents is noted in the status check portion of the card.
applicants without proper immigration documents could not legally obtain a driver's license. The only change with the current legislation is that it would allow for issuance of a driver's license or ID card upon providing an unexpired foreign passport and certified birth certificate from a foreign country without the necessity of the official document being issued in the United States. And so that would be the major differences that have come into play through the course of the year, because the other requirements still remain the same. An applicant has to show proof of insurance and take and pass the behind-the-wheel test if they're getting a driver's license, and take and pass the written test. All applicants have to fill out an application and go through our application process, which includes getting a photo and then paying the fee. So those would be, that's kind of how it's evolved over the years.
Mr. Chair, just a brief rebuttal.
Senator Rosner.
To Senator Franzen's comments is that if we only use driver's licenses just for driving, I would agree with what you said. The problem is something called unintended consequences, that we use driver's licenses not just for driving in the state of Minnesota. We use them as forms of identification for voting. We use them as forms of identification on when you're getting a job. When you fill out the I-9, I don't know if it's an I-9 form anymore, but when you fill out the documentation, that is a legal form of documentation that goes to proving your citizenship. It also goes to getting a passport. It also goes for going through something as simple as airport security. The driver's license is just not exclusively, myopically, just for driving in Minnesota. It is for a number of residency establishment clauses in our statutory language and in what we do here in Minnesota, and that's the issue, at least in my opinion.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to respond to that, I understand that driver's licenses are used for more than just driving. That's a given. But what you're suggesting, Senator Osmick, is that people have the negative or criminal intent to use a driver's license for all the areas that you mentioned. And I think that's really disingenuous. I think that's poor form to think that we're talking about people who are going to use this license for negative intent. And I completely disagree with your assumptions.
All right. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Berezovsky, I'm a bit confused, and I'm hoping you can provide some clarity. When I look at subpart 4, proof of residency, it refers back to the section that Ms. McCormick and Senator Champion referred to, 7410.400, which listed out a number of documents that would be required to prove residency. And within that, it refers back to rule 7410.410. So as we're considering the change that Senator Champion is proposing, how do those two pieces of rules work together? Because in a sense they're tied at the hip, and changes to one affect changes to the other.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, let me just take a quick look at subpart 4. The documents specified in part 7410.0400, subpart 1 or 2, are either a previous driver's license or ID, a previous state ID card.
Yep.
Or a primary document that an applicant for a driver's license would need to produce. It isn't specifically about residence. It's, you know, a birth certificate and other types of primary documentation of identity.
All right. Senator Champion, we had a – oh, I'm sorry, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if counsel could explain, if we do not do this repealer, if we do the bill as is but don't do the repealer on the proof of residency, what would be the result?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, so if we left in effect these first subparts of the proof of residency section, well, I don't think that that would really be inconsistent. The first section of the bill requires attestation as to residence, and the second part refers to a certain type of identification that will now be acceptable. So if we leave those residency pieces in place, and then would you also leave the status check pieces in place?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Ms. Berzosky. I'm just asking, if there was no repealer, what would we be left with? And then I also have a follow-up question to that.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Senator Miller, if there were no repealer, we would essentially have current law except for the new type of, I believe, except for the new type of identification card that would be acceptable.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, if the repealer goes through and is passed, we keep talking about that there still will be proof of residence. What law or what rule are we looking at for a Minnesota citizen, a documented citizen, undocumented citizen? Where would that be in current state law or rule?
Ms. Berzosky.
Mr. Chair, the 171.06 in statute talks about the application, and in subdivision 3, a person has to state a residence address or a designated address. The rule, Minnesota Rule 7410.0400, has to do with documenting proof of name, date of birth, identity, and it does require an applicant for a license to have a residence address in the state of Minnesota, and the applicant must indicate the residence in the state, must have only one residence in the state, and the residence address is presumed to continue until the contrary is shown. The applicant must indicate a residence number, street name, street type, directional, if any, city or town, state, and zip code. That's what we would be left with in rule.
And Mr. Chair, just one more follow-up for Ms. McCormick. So the way I read this language, basically on the application for a driver's license, there would be a box, and you just check that box. So you're attesting that you're a resident of the state of Minnesota, but there's no other documentation, no other check. You're just checking the box. Is that correct?
Well, and Senator Miller, you have to, of course, give the address, and then the document is mailed to that address.
Mr. Chair, Member
Kupczynski.
The completion of the application, you attest to your address. That's the specific purpose of that application. So there is no box that's checked. It's you write in your address, and that's your attestation. And you sign it, correct?
Okay. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a question for Ms. McCormick. You mentioned that you had gone through a lot of these checks and other stuff and information that you have. Could you maybe explain then, if you're doing all of that, how you have that
Also, when you first started, you talked about those 31,000 duplicates. How does that happen if you're doing all those checks?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, what I was talking about is that right now we have 31,000 ID cards and driver's license that have status check on the card. That's what I said. So that's how many people we have here that are temporarily here on, with presenting immigration documents.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Got that number, yes, but there's also a number around the 30,000, some that are also currently in your system that are duplicates. I must have the wrong number.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I don't know what you mean. A duplicate license, what I mean by that is when someone has a status check, when they change address, we call that a duplicate license, but when they have a status check, we give them a new license. They bring in their updated immigration document. We don't make them renew because a renewal, it costs more money and involves other requirements. They get an updated duplicate status check license or ID card. And all that means is that we're going to put a new date on that card because the immigration document has been extended.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm not communicating clearly enough. Ms. McCormick, what I was referring to is something else outside of this in a previous situation where there has been facial recognition software being mandated to be run on the DVS current photos in the system, and that there's been some question and that there are duplicate driver's license, state ID cards. This does not have a connection with the status check. This is just in the system overall. This is a previous situation reported by the legislative auditor is doing an audit as well as some other information as well that has been before us in one way over the past month or so as far as running the facial recognition, there being duplicates in the system, irregardless of status check.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, because I wasn't in the discussion with the legislative auditor, what I think they're talking about is what we call a duplicate. We're talking about a kind of a license, and what that means is you're not getting a brand new license. You are getting a license where an address has been changed. We don't do a new photo when we do a duplicate license. The only thing we change on that license is the address. We call that a duplicate. If they were talking about it with the legislative auditor, the only thing I could think of is that they were talking about just duplicate pictures. I don't know what that would be because facial recognition is a separate program that has nothing to do with the licenses or duplicate licenses. Facial recognition means we look at every single photo of that individual and ensure that we have that there hasn't been fraud, and if there is some reason to doubt it, then we bring them in for an interview and they have to prove who they say they are.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm referring to here is where you have what appears to be the same photo but with different addresses and different situations like that. If I could ask Ms. Bereshofsky a question about, it was mentioned before, short-term, that this was a section that references short-term. Could you define, is there a place in there where it tells what short-term means?
Ms. Bereshofsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I'm not aware of a definition, but I think it means not permanent.
Could that be as long as 4 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Mr. Chair, I assume that it could be if a person had a green card that was renewed periodically, but the initial short term, I don't think could be as long as 10 years. But I'm outside of really what I ought to be talking about.
Thank you, Ms. Barashofsky. But I just wanted to follow up. What you're referring to is a documentation where you have documents. My understanding is this is supposed to apply to an area where it's not about having the documents, but kind of a short term when you don't have them. I think that's, it seems like we've got these different tracks and these different systems going on with different rules in different places. So it just kind of leads you to just really wonder what that is. But Mr. Chairman, I can see that we probably exhausted Ms. Barashofsky, as she said, so I won't press further. Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one more follow-up to the testifiers, and I want to make it clear, I'm not certainly not opposed to the idea, but I do have concerns around the proof of residence portion of this and how it's going to be implemented within the driver and vehicle services. So if they're attesting to their Minnesota address just by writing it down and then they sign the application, my question to the testifiers, do they have to support that with any proof, documentation, a utility bill, anything like that that says that has their name with the current address?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, at this point it doesn't appear that that's what the bill says, but as I was saying before, you would have to be living at that address because they don't get the card over the counter. The card is mailed to that household. If they aren't living there, the post office delivers it back to DVS, and we keep that in a secure room and have to have proof before someone sure. can pick that address or pick up that card.
And Mr. Chair, and I get that point, but you could very easily, someone could have their mail sent to someone else, and it concerns me. Again, I'm not opposed to the idea. The proof of residence is very concerning to me, and I think we need to work on that portion of this.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Champion?
Just so there's clarity, under the current law,
don't do it either.
We are proposing to do it just the way current law is right now. So we're not not suggesting a different process when we think in terms of the residency and them attesting to it than what every other Minnesotan has to do.
Okay, Senator Champion, I did see on the witness list Crystal Escobar and Wendy Hickey.
I think, Mr. Chair, are they here?
Did you
want to testify?
Sure. These are folks who either yes. your office provided to us or called our office ahead of
okay.
time.
Okay. I thought we were having two witnesses, Mr. Chair, but it seems like we have more.
Well, we do want to honor the list. All right.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I just would like to bring up two points for the committee members. It seems like the conversation has become a little bit distracted as to how this bill truly affects the average Minnesota citizen, resident, whatever, however you want to refer to the people living in the state and working in the state and paying taxes in the state. The current residency requirements are no different. Any of you could walk in today and there will be no utility bill asked of you, and there will be no, you know, phone bill or cable bill with your name and address on it asked of you. And this is simply how a person who provides documentation from a foreign country, that's exactly how they will prove that they're residents of the state, the same exact way that you prove it today under the current law. The two points that I want to really emphasize are the public safety issue. This has definitely been a drainer of capacity for a lot of the parts of especially the metro area where this, unfortunately, is taking up a lot of time from our law enforcement officers who are having to pull people over repeatedly because they have a tag on the title of that vehicle. And since we cannot eliminate the property rights of anybody living in the state, whether they are a legal citizen or permanent resident or not, then we creating a situation in which law enforcement officers are being distracted by a situation that involves no criminal activity, but only the civil issue of driving without a driver's license. Just as if I got in a car at 14 years old, I would receive a citation. If our officers are spending their time pulling drivers over for that reason, they are not protecting the citizens against criminal activity that is going on. The second issue is really regarding the insurance issue. So insurance, for all practical purposes, is a tax in the state of Minnesota. We have wonderful no-fault laws, which make our insurance very expensive. And, you know, according to the Minnesota Department of Driver and Vehicle Services, greater than 14% of drivers are out there on the roads uninsured. This is a big civil issue, and it's keeping our court system clogged up. And, of course, you can imagine with the effects of the recent recession, that number has creeped up. So have insurance rates. They've creeped up substantially with all admitted carriers in the state filing for increases, some in the double digits, since 2008. And that is a tax that all our licensed drivers who have access to insurance are paying. And the reason they are paying that is because there are many unlicensed drivers, upwards of 45,000 on the roads, who often do not have access or at rates so exorbitant that they choose not to participate in the insurance system. So I urge you to look at this legislation not from the standpoint of whether we are enacting some sort of immigration reform or whether we are enacting some sort of way for non-permanent residents and non-citizens to fraudulently vote. This legislation is in no way meant to do any of that. Those problems already exist in our systems, and we need to make sure that they are handled, but that's not what this legislation is here to do. It's here to provide for the public safety of all drivers and to ensure that we are all participating in the insurance system and thus continuing to make Minnesota an attractive, safe place to live and a place where consumers are protected.
And your name for the record was?
Yes, Christelle Escobar, and I'm the chair for the Chicano Latino Affairs Council.
All right, thank you. All right, questions, members?
So, Mr. Senator Chair, that's a correction. The agenda says she's with Farmers Insurance.
I also am with Farmers Insurance.
So you're representing Farmers Insurance Company?
Well, I cannot officially, for I've spoken with some folks in our Legislative Affairs Council internally at Farmers Insurance, and I'm not here representing neither the insurance industry nor Farmers Insurance formally, but I'm here with my knowledge in both working with the community and working in the insurance industry.
Thank you. Great. Questions, thank you. Members? All right. Anything further, Senator Champion?
Was that the only other?
Oh, we had Wendy Hickey who had called our office. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Wendy Hickey, and I'm the current president for La Puerta Huerta United Methodist Women's Group. La Puerta Huerta United Methodist Church is located in St. Paul, and we're a multicultural church that welcomes everyone regardless of their race, economic status, or immigration status. And the United Methodist Women of both La Puerta Huerta and many United Methodist Women's groups across Minnesota are in support of this bill. The majority welcome the opportunity for all of us to be able to drive on safe roads. We see that as the main goal of this bill. This bill would affect many people, many families, not just in the Hispanic community, but in communities of different cultures all over Minnesota. This bill would also affect me and my family personally. My husband was born in Mexico and came to Minnesota in 1996 without proper permission. We have been together for 13 years, and we have three beautiful children who were all born here, ages 10, 9, and today our youngest turns 8. My husband had a Minnesota driver's license for 14 years. Approximately 3 years ago, he received a letter in the mail stating his license was canceled, but if he were to show proof of residency in this country, he would be able to get it back. My husband is not able, due to the current immigration laws, to have legal status at this time. He has committed no crimes other than crossing without permission. My husband was working for a company where he had to drive every day when he lost his license. He drove a crew of approximately 4 to 5 employees and was responsible to haul trailers behind his vehicle. He lost that job and that income for our family. Because of the current modification, he is not able to get that driver's license back without proof of citizenship. If this bill passed, he would be able to provide for our family, and he would be able to legally drive to work, and he would be able to legally drive our 3 children, who are citizens, to church and school and soccer practice and other activities. This bill would allow us to legally drive our children safely. We have had both situations here in Minnesota. In our family, we have been able to have legal driver's license status for both my husband and myself, and we've also have it where now he doesn't have the ability to drive legally. We see what it is like and how it affects our family to not be able to drive with a license, and it is very difficult. We do struggle much more than what we did before. We would ask, on behalf of the United Methodist Women and on behalf of families like mine, thousands of families that are affected by this, that you will take all families into consideration, including families like mine, when you decide to vote yes or no on this bill. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Ms. Hickey. Questions, members? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. You, to the testifier, you mentioned that you guys have had it both ways, where your husband was able to drive,
yes,
and now he's not able to drive. Can you explain that, why he was at one point and now he's not?
Ms. Yes.
Say, Mr. Chair, then.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, my husband came here in 1996, and at that time, as the lady had previously mentioned, the rules at that time, you were able to get a Minnesota driver's license without showing proof of citizenship to our country. So he was able to get it at that time. However, they had done a Social Security check or some sort of a check within the Department of Motor Vehicles, and they saw that he did not have a Social Security number on that license application. So because of that, they sent him a letter saying, we see that you don't have a Social Security number. According to our new laws that were passed in 2003, according to my understanding, you have to have a Social Security number to have a license, so we're taking it away from you unless you can prove that you do have residency. And there are thousands of people, not just my husband. I know of several other people that also lost their license that had it for 13 years, and now they are still driving.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, members? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just, I guess it's related and maybe, but in your situation, him marrying you doesn't give him legal status here, or what was there, that doesn't give him legal status at this point?
Ms. Hickey.
Chairman and Senator Westrom, my husband has a unique situation. However, there are many other people that also have the same situation because he crossed without permission, and he was at one point he was actually prosecuted for crossing without permission. He was detained at the border and sent back, and they actually prosecuted him for doing that. And because of that, he is ineligible for 10 years. So he would have to leave me and my children for 10 years and wait outside in order underneath the current immigration laws. Does that clarify or answer your question?
It does. And I, we had a family in our church that had a similar situation to what you're describing, and they actually ended up going back across the border for a couple of months, a couple of years back, and then coming back across. And so he was able to go across. He had to do some paperwork there and then come back. And so I just was wondering if that was an option. But I know the fact that they were married allowed him to do that, and now he's got legal status here. But anyways, I didn't want to get too far into it, but thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Chairman
Senator,
and Senator Westrom, if I can just add on that quickly. We have spoken with several attorneys and are aware that there are many other people in Minnesota with this same circumstance. And according to how the immigration is right now, unless there is some sort of reform, he would not be able to qualify at this time.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, again, want to remind members, this is not an immigration bill because it really isn't. This is about driver's license. And if any attempt to make this an immigration issue, for those attorneys here, know that immigration laws change daily. So I would really encourage you to stick to the focus of this bill because we don't have an immigration attorney right in this room right now to answer the questions you might have regarding that. And I just think it just diverts the attention from the issue that we're in the bill that we're trying to tackle today. So just want to make sure that we can stay focused on the issue because we can get lost really quickly.
Thank you. Senator Pratt and then Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find it interesting, and thank you for laying out the timeline, because a number of these provisions were put in, as you said, 2003, post 9/11, to strengthen the verification to make sure that we do have, in fact, a credible system that Senator Kiffmeyer addressed. Provisions that strengthened identity, provisions that strengthened residency, provisions that affected us in the banking laws that govern who can get who, what kind of financial transactions you can do. So I think I think we have to tread very, very carefully here. As we start removing those provisions that were put in 2003 to make sure that we're not opening this up too broadly, to make sure that we are, in fact, doing the right work to establish residency, to establish identity, and to make sure that we do, in fact, have the right people. And for anybody who's legally eligible to get a driver's license, Senator Champion, I agree, we should make sure they have the right to get, or the ability, not the right, the ability to get auto insurance. But this goes a lot farther than that. By removing the status check, by removing and weakening the residency provisions, we're undoing many of the protections, the provisions that were put in earlier in the last decade, and I think that's very dangerous.
All right. Thank you, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in an odd way, I want to agree with both Senator Pratt and Senator Franzen, because I think it comes back to the fundamental question of what is a driver's license supposed to do? It says, I am who I say I am, and we have a number of ways that is verified, and we've heard Ms. McCormick talk about that in some detail. And it says, I know how to drive. And the state of Minnesota recognizes that I've proven that I can drive. Beyond that, I think you get into trickier situations. And where residency needs to be established in the case of elections, that's a different conversation. But for right now, we're talking about public safety. That's our purview here. And we want to make sure that people who are driving cars are who they say they are and that they know how to drive. And then that they can get insurance as a result of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, members? All right, Senator Champion, do you have a motion?
I have a motion that I recommend that this bill be passed and refer to finance.
Right, and members, I know at least in one instance, another member wants to be in the room, and he's presenting a bill, so we have to pull him off the witness stand. So we'll just wait a second for Senator Carlson.
Chair, I'll burn some time then.
All right, Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Ms. McCormick, maybe you know the answer to this. Maybe it's too broad. Or Senator Champion, what is required or what's allowed in other countries?
Ms. Hickey or Ms. Escobar, could you make room for Ms. McCormick?
If citizens from Minnesota go to another country to get a driver's license, and does it matter if they're documented or undocumented? Are they allowed to drive?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I don't have that information readily available. I think we do have some information we had gotten from AMBA that talks about other countries' licensure requirements, and so I can go back and check. I know that AMBA has been working across
several continents in terms of sharing what we do here in the United States and newer countries in Africa. And we have a good working relationship with the European countries, and we have a close relationship with the Canadian provinces and with Mexico in terms of they do have similar types of requirements, but we'll get some information for the whole committee, if not tomorrow, as soon as we can get it.
Okay, that'd be helpful and insightful, I think. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Champion, I
would like to renew my motion because I see the last person coming in who is locked out of the door right there.
All right, so Senator Champion moves Senate file number 271 as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'll request a roll call vote.
All right, a roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. Clerk will check the roll.
Chairman Dibble.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Franzen.
Yes.
Senator Jensen.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
No.
Senator Miller.
No.
Senator Osmick.
No.
Senator Peterson.
No.
Senator Pratt.
No.
Senator Reinert.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Senjum.
No.
Senator Tomasoni.
Yes.
Senator Westrum. Senator Weaker.
Yes.
On a vote of 10 to 7, the motion passes. The bill is referred. All right, we'll allow a little demonstration. Well, members, that's great. We're done a little bit early. We're back here on Wednesday. A lot of bills, second deadline, and so we may go into the evening. With that, the committee is adjourned.